Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm joined by Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated and Pete Sampson of The Athletic. I'm Tim Priester. Did I say that already? I said it again. Notre Dame just had their draft for the 93rd annual Blue Gold game. We're not going to get too deep into the weeds with this. We could. There's a lot to it. But because some guys were already placed on the blue team and the gold team, and then they had a draft. We have a list of injuries here, one of which we don't know the significance. We could say injury, or we could say they're just preserving him. I guess we have questions about Jadarian Price, a running back who we know is not going to participate in the Blue Gold game.
Yeah, the draft's interesting. My research capabilities on email got me to last year's draft. The first pick was Jabron Payne of the entire draft. Leo Scheidler went ahead of Braylon James, so maybe they were being accurate when they were doing these things. Joe Alt was the first offensive lineman taken. And Billy Schroth was way down the list. So, you know what? I think a lot of it has to do with your availability for the game, where you can be drafted in these situations, because you're not going to play a lot and you're trying to win as the coach, but you have rules about how you can win. You got to be smart about your draft too, which means CJ Carr should have been the first pick of this draft. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was the first pick for both teams.
He was going to play for both teams. So I don't think that he was eligible to be picked. Angeli went ahead of Minchie. You know, again, like I said, we could get deep into the weeds with this, but you know, other guys that are other injuries, I guess we know about Jaden Harrison and Mitchell Evans, and Jordan Faison has a lacrosse game on Saturday at home against North Carolina. So while his football teammates will be in the football stadium, he'll be at Arlotta Stadium playing lacrosse. Of course, we know about Riley Leonard. Jaden Thomas has a hamstring. So the usual suspects, everybody will hear about this when they hear the broadcast. But, you know, like Tim, as you said, there's some gamesmanship going on here a little bit as far as who's going to play more. Like Pete, you said, you don't think Jack Kaiser's playing. He was one of the guys that was already placed on a team naturally.
Yeah, I mean, as all the seniors were, I believe. And like, I think there will probably be a handful of guys, and Kaiser could be one of them, that just, you know, go out for the first series and that's a wrap. You know, I the funniest thing from the draft for me is someone thought they could trade Junior Tuihalamaka for Boubacar Traore. Like, yeah, give me a freaking break on that one.
Was that L. Washington? Was the blue team, I think? Whichever, whether it was Washington or McCullough, they shot that down in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I was a bit confused on that.
That was funny. That was actually funny. There was a trade. There was an Osbury for Snead trade that may have been more positional need than anything, maybe inside guy, outside guy. I'm not sure. We're reading too much. And at Notre Dame, of course, they play this game up. They have their little videos leading up to the game. It's L. Washington versus Dylan McCullough again for the third time. It's 1-1, so they, you know, portray it as a lot at stake. But the reality is that they just want to get out of this scrimmage healthy. I will say that the one guy that I was surprised, well, obviously he's healthy, but I the one guy that we thought, okay, just sit him out and so he can go into the summer with nothing wrong, Eli Raridan, but he was drafted and he will participate. They're short on tight ends naturally, but I was a little bit surprised. You know, they do have two tight ends. That's the blue team. I would imagine Jack Larson gets a whole bunch of snaps on Saturday.
Marty Auer was the second safety drafted last year, and it doesn't seem like he kept that status. So maybe we can start asking Marcus Freeman, why did Marty Auer fall in the draft? Is there something wrong with him? That's how I look. That's how I look at this draft.
Somebody who asked that right question.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, actually, that would be a guy I think you'd take high. Maybe so. He must be climbing up the chart, or maybe he has a small injury we have to research.
I thought it was interesting. Like I thought we were going to talk about, you know, this leads us into Bryce McPherson, who's put his name in the portal. And then the first thing that Marcus Freeman said at the draft was there would be no punting. And so I thought it maybe had something to do with that, so that you wouldn't see the other punters.
They never punt.
You know, maybe not have a great day in their first, you know, lead role, so to speak, in the stadium, but there'll be no punting. Which is fine. You know, there's no returns, generally speaking.
But so they used to do have punting with no return.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
And they're just going to mark off.
They're just going
to
mark off 40. If you're going to punt, you're just going to mark off 40 yards, and the other team takes over. But we'll see what happens. And again, I'm probably going to say this with our last question of the day. But what happened last Saturday in Notre Dame Stadium with ones, twos, and threes is more significant than anything you're going to see on Saturday. Now, I know that won't dissuade anybody from coming away from the Blue Gold game saying they don't have this and they don't have that. But really what happened last Saturday is more important. And they just want to get out of this healthy. I see Mississippi. Mississippi didn't even play football in their spring game. They did tug of war and
Did they really? That's incredible.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin. Yeah, they didn't even. I don't even know how much they did. Some 7-on-7 stuff.
Do you guys think? I think we talked about this last year. Sadly, do you guys think it would be more fun for people to watch a real practice if they did like 5 segments of scrimmage because they get to see how Notre Dame practices? So you're doing 1-on-1. You're doing 1-on-1. You're doing 7-on-7. You're doing.
The breakdown by position, I don't think would be very interesting for people. I know what you're saying. I mean, but why couldn't you have done what you did Saturday, this past Saturday, for the Blue Gold game?
Because it's on Peacock.
Yeah, it's on. Some people can watch it.
Anybody can come to the game and record what's going on, too, and it's on Peacock.
Well, I mean, have the same format. That's what I mean.
I think it just speaks to the spring game's lack of utility as, you know, a development opportunity for these guys. It's just like, if you're a younger player, you get a chance to play Notre Dame Stadium with some fans. If you're an older player, you're just like, can we get this over with? Whereas it's a practice, much more competitive ones versus ones. I mean, the way they break this up, I think sort of kneecaps most of the competitive vibes before the game even starts, because it's not like if you're a starter and you're going against a second or third team player, like I don't know if like I have to win this rep the way it is if it's ones versus ones. So that was one of the best stuff of what we saw last weekend is ones versus ones.
Yeah, but that was brief, of course. Oh, yeah.
Offense.
And that's why. You talk about how well CJ Carr threw the ball, and then you get pushback about, it was against third team. I don't give a damn who he was throwing against. The way he threw the football was very, very impressive. And then, the big judgment on a scrimmage that you didn't see that we all came out saying, my God, can he throw the football? It wasn't a matter of who he was throwing it against. It was the way the ball was being delivered and arriving at into the hands of the receiver. It looked different than there were audible gasps in the press box when he threw the football the other day.
I wanted to address a question on our board that said, I think it was Annie Davis that said, because people talked about Steve Angeli faced a lot of backups for Oregon State. And then of course you say, well, he was playing with backups for Notre Dame. But he said, will Steve Angeli be judged the same way as CJ Carr when CJ Carr is going against twos and threes? What if Angeli was going against twos and threes? No, because everybody thinks CJ Carr is going to be better than Steve Angeli. So for the first time you get a chance to see CJ Carr throw and you go, he throws the ball better than other people. That's why we judge him differently. It doesn't mean he'd be a better college quarterback. It means looking at his raw talent, he has the most raw talent. Doesn't mean he's going to be a better quarterback than Steve Angeli at all. He does have more raw talent and he throws a better football.
I agree with you. And if Steve Angeli had made the exact same throws last Saturday, we would have gasped at that too.
Right.
That it was.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just visually impressive.
Right. He played an impressive leadership and he did a great job against Oregon State, but you're never like, holy cow, I didn't know he could do that. That's, yeah, I mean, that's not football, but that's different.
The touchdown to Flanagan against Pittsburgh was one where I was like, damn, yes. Nice throw.
Agreed. That, we all said that. We all said that.
We did, yes.
Said it, wrote it, podcasted about it. Like, and I think with Carr, it's have to keep in mind, he's a mid-year enrollee. We've never seen a mid-year enrollee do that. Never, ever. So that adds to the, like, ooh, okay, this is something a little bit different.
Yeah, the only guy that ever played like that was, and of course, you mean quarterback, but well, Aaron Lynch was insane as a mid-year enrollee in his spring game. Remember, yes. Andrew Hendricks? Andrew Hendricks goes, that's no high school out there.
Yeah. All right, well, let's, you know what, I'm gonna table the McPherson conversation for second segment because we start with a question with that. Cam Williams is Price and Williams were the names. We weren't surprised by Cam Williams because we knew ahead of time. Price, we're not sure what that is, so we'll find that out on Saturday. Williams apparently has a hamstring issue. I don't know when it happened on Saturday.
Or it could have happened in an ensuing practice.
Or if it happened during the week, because they have had several practices. But he will be out. We'll get more on that. Goog 2.0 is happening. John Bryce talked about it extensively in our last podcast, so that is happening. We will be getting an announcement on that. I want to wrap up segment one with a little bit of basketball. Matt Alaco. Us old timers remember the Alaco name because Frank Alaco was backup quarterback to Tom Clements on the 73 national championship team. Good athlete, played basketball, as did his brother. Matt Alaco is a third cousin, I think, to the Alacos that played at Notre Dame. I would encourage our subscribers to check out what I wrote about him in advance a few weeks ago, because I think he's a good player. I think he's a sturdy 6'4", sharp shooting guard that, you know, at the time, the way it was portrayed to me was, we want an experienced guard that doesn't feel like he has to be a starter, because Notre Dame's backcourt of Marcus Burton, who we expect to pull his name eventually out of the NBA draft, and Braden Shrewsbury, you want those guys on the court majority of the time.
I think it's great that Burton can play off the ball now, though, with a more talented point guard. That's huge.
Absolutely. Now, I would call Alaco a combo guard. I mean, I think he's a secondary ball handler, but he's certainly capable. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Logan Imes, I think, is a secondary ball handler too, but it's better to have Alaco as your secondary ball handler.
Yeah, it upgrades the third guard at a minimum, and maybe gives you like a second Braden Shrewsbury, who is obviously a lot more experienced. Like, they had one guy they could just kick it to outside the 3-point range where you thought it was going in. That was Shrewsbury. Now they have two.
That's a good point. Now, there's still work to be done in the portal. They need a big man, and you have to somehow replace the minutes that Kerry Booth had, who has since verbally committed to Illinois, which is a good move for him. It's just awful for team game, but it's great for him. He's going to Elite Eight team. He's got Underwood as his coach, who's, I think, is an exceptional coach. Good for him, bad for, you know. And where I wrote about in today's Thursday Thoughts, where it really hurts is the mid-majors, that, you know, you can develop a guy into a hell of a player and then he just leaves you. I get it. I know coaches can pick up stakes and leave, but coaches don't like leave every other year unless they're getting fired. It's just difficult for a team game, and make no mistake, these are team games, and it's tough on schools, trying to constantly, you never know who you're going to have and who you won't have. All right, we're going to come back. Segment two, we will talk more about Bryce McPherson and plenty of other things as it relates to the Blue Gold game this Saturday. Segment two coming up, Burning Up the Boards.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question from FL Irish 76. Nobody had punter on their transfer portal bingo card. What are Notre Dame's options? And I would like to add to FL Irish, I did not have punter on my starting segment two bingo card heading into this week either.
None of us had that at the forefront here. And, you know, we were caught by surprise a little bit, certainly. I wrote about this in Thursday Thoughts. I know that McPherson had wanted to be the kickoff guy. He was the kickoff guy prior to the start of the Ohio State game in 2022, but he pulled up lame. They never went back to him. You know, I there was a quote from Marty Biaggi this spring about saying that they want him to just focus on punting and be more consistent. And I think a lot of that had to do with his hang time's not very consistent. The net punting wasn't great because opponents were returning punts at a 10-yard clip. So adding all that up, I talked about him not getting the kickoff job, which again, he had stiff competition from Spencer Schrader last year. And again, for Mitch Jeter this year, and of course, Zach Yoakum's still around. Having said all that, there may be a little bit more to the story, Pete Sampson.
Yeah, I think his consistency issues were much greater than what Biaggi let on, or what you guys saw in all the spring practice availabilities. And I don't think he took that well when Notre Dame told him. So it's like when you talk about him trying to win a new job, I think he may have been closer to losing his current job than winning a new one. So I don't know if Notre Dame is all super broken up about it. But if McPherson had punted better in spring practice, I don't think this would have been an issue. The problem was that he didn't.
Still can't believe it's on my bingo card to start this thing off. That is a shock. It's just a weird thing. It's a weird thing to leave, but I mean, if it doesn't surprise them, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
And I think Tim and we were discussing pre-podcast here, where do they turn? If they want to turn, they could turn to about 120 starting punters and ask them if they want to come play for Notre Dame, or they could find a really good non-scholarship one, because unless you're the Alabama punter or the Georgia punter or the Ohio State or Michigan punter, the answer is probably yes, I will come punt for you.
And we saw he was inconsistent. We saw it. But, you know, it's spring and he's a guy that punted 45 yards a clip last year. So I didn't put a lot of weight onto that. But as far as, you know, alternatives, Chris Salerno, Matt's younger brother, is a punter kicker. I don't think he's good enough based upon the few times that we've seen him punt. There was, you know, a few weeks back, we were introduced to 30-year-old Eric Goins, the former military man who kicked and punted at the Citadel. He averaged 40 yards a punt 11 years ago. But really, like, I mean, he's probably a lot stronger than he was in 2013. And you know, I mean, he's probably at this stage of his life at 30 years old and a grown man with additional strength. Could probably
put it this way. If somebody told you Kyle Brinza is going to come punt for Notre Dame this year, he'd be like, cool, I bet he's pretty good still. So that is what we have with Goins.
But you're right, Tim. I mean, that is the one position where you want to come punt for Notre Dame, they'd be lining up.
And to be fair, this is an admission for me. I did not think I had to watch the backup punters. So I did not watch a lot of backup punting in this spring practice segment, and lesson learned. I cannot tell you enough about them, but we'll find out about them in August because they're not punting during the Blue Gold game, as we pointed out.
Yeah, because we were more concerned on the back end of the punt and who was returning punts and
exactly. Who his protectors are.
Yeah, I was taking note of that.
I don't write that down.
I have first, second, and 13 personal protectors.
Me too. I have all the protectors now. I didn't watch them punt once. All I see is like, oh, his Faison's not back there. I don't care. Okay. But it was, I'll watch with a little more attention to detail next time.
It's 2024 college football. Anything is possible today. Question from CMU Pens fan. With many of the wide receivers showing out in spring ball, where do you see Bo Collins fitting in an offense when he officially comes aboard?
That's a great question for me. He almost has a mild advantage with assuming Riley Leonard is the quarterback and that Riley Leonard didn't get to work with a lot of people as much as he would have had he been healthy. I mean, he is one of the six guys I write down as ahead of, I might not be right, but as ahead of Micah Gilbert, because I'm so impressed with Micah Gilbert that Gilbert would have to reel in one of those six guys to play in front of him. Gilbert's kind of my cutoff seventh.
I think that as a boundary receiver, a red zone receiver, like Bo Collins is probably going to be your guy. They don't have a lot of body types like him, and the one they do in Deion Colsey has kind of been, I mean, he's been inconsistent. He hasn't been productive. So I would think that if Deion Colsey had established himself more, I don't know if you bring in Bo Collins, but he hadn't. So you do. And when you bring him in, I think you've sort of made it clear the direction you want to go. So, whether it's Jaden Thomas as a boundary receiver, Micah Gilbert is more developmental. There are reps to be had there for Bo Collins. So it's open.
In terms of position, he's definitely a boundary receiver. I don't think they have a whole lot of flexibility there with that. But we know that Greathouse is playing a little bit there too. And Greathouse was the number one receiver chosen for the draft, which is not a surprise to us. Of course, Jaden Thomas is injured, and he would be another boundary receiver with some flexibility in the slot, just like Greathouse. But, Bo Collins, he does have something to prove with this group. Maybe when he committed Notre Dame, it seemed, and Pete, I think your point's well taken, Deion Colsey. I mean, if he was established, they probably wouldn't have had to go out and get him. So there's a lot to prove there, and there's the chemistry that needs to be developed with Riley Leonard and all the quarterbacks. So, it'll be interesting to see. If it truly is six guys, as Mike Brown has said, it's going to be a really competitive August. There's a lot of potential receivers out there. KK Smith, although, certainly not a boundary candidate. KK Smith is a guy that's on the rise. Micah Gilbert's on the rise. Jordan Faison, which we have a question about, which I think I'm just going to go ahead and slip in right now.
Yeah.
And that is from Karsten 44. Jordan Faison seems to be the darling of the Four Horsemen Lounge. While I love the kid's story and I'm rooting for him, I think he's being drastically overrated. Please change my mind that with the upgrades in the wide receiver room this year, that he's going to end up taking a back seat, or Karsten 44 is concerned that he's going to end up taking a back seat to Greathouse and Mitchell and Collins and Harrison and Thomas and Gilbert and even Jeremiah Love.
I like the question, because I remember thinking, watching the wide receivers midway through spring, Jordan Faison should make sure he gets going here in June to reestablish himself as part of Notre Dame's pecking order. But I mean, Faison's, he's not drastically overrated. Faison's good. He's a good college football player, and so are these guys. Like, the only guy here, Jaden Greathouse could have a breakout year. Chris Mitchell is remarkably productive, and he could have a very, very good year for Notre Dame. You can't tell me everybody else on here is going to be more productive than Jordan Faison. You can argue for all of them that he wrote down, but I don't think you can guarantee me that they're better than Jordan Faison.
No, I mean, Faison is a one position player, does a really good job in that one position, but all these other receivers we're talking about are multi-position players. So there's more value there with those other guys. Would you rather have Greathouse out there or Faison? I'd rather have Greathouse.
Yeah.
So if Mitchell is great as a field receiver and Bo Collins is like a revelation as a boundary receiver, then Jordan Faison, I think, drops into more of a rotational player opposed to somebody that you got to lean on. But
I think he'll be rotational no matter.
But part of it, there's quickness that Faison has that the other guys don't. And that's undeniable. But he's not a complete receiver. Like I said, he's a one position guy. He does a really good job in that one position. But when you have him on the field, it does maybe take away from some versatility that you can do other things. But the quickness is, man, it's really impressive.
Yeah. Pete, I'm going to disagree with you. And I think part of this has to do with your absence from a stretch of spring practice, because in speaking with Mike Denbrock, he absolutely considers Jordan Faison a field receiver as well. Hmm. So he's going to, he feels he has the flexibility to move him around. He has the two guys that he mentioned with the greatest flexibility were Greathouse and Faison. And he literally said Greathouse can play all three positions. Faison, he said two. So Faison will pop over there with Mitchell. I agree. Mitchell is the lead guy there. And then, Greathouse and Faison are kind of one and one A in the slot. So he does offer a little bit more versatility in that. And I do think it's a good question. I think it's fair, but I disagree wholeheartedly that Faison is drastically overrated. I don't think he's even slightly overrated. He's a good football player, and he does offer a little bit of flexibility. Denbrock talked about Faison as one of the main guys when we had an opportunity to talk to him. So,
Tim, do you think it's telling that he didn't include Jaden Thomas as one of the more versatile players? Because he was the most versatile receiver last year.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I think there's something to that. Now, that might have been because he was already kind of banged up and wasn't getting
Hey, we don't know that.
Like
that
any time. Coach, what's fresh in your mind is what just happened on the practice field. I included this question because I just disagreed with it. I think Faison's the real deal. He's the real deal in lacrosse. He's the real, if you're a great lacrosse player and you have enough athletic ability and size, you can play this game. You got
to
be.
I do want to see. Don't you want to see? I want to see Jaden Harrison in there, though, some too. He looks so quick. Oh, no doubt.
Now he is a step. Pete, he had said, Denbrock had said, Harrison is a true slot. So you've got
to see that. He's so also quite quick.
Yeah, he's really quick. And so you got to do some. You got to be a little bit creative with those guys and move them around, because otherwise the guys are going to get pigeonholed and you're not going to have the flexibility that you have. So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. Tim, you want to jump up back up to the previous question?
Steamy Ray Vaughn, which is John Bryce's favorite handle, is Jaden Greathouse going to be Golden Tate 2.0?
I would never ever come up with a Golden Tate comparison.
Comparison, right?
Well, yeah. If the comparison is productivity, well, yeah, maybe Jaden Greathouse can be.
He's ahead of Golden Tate in that case.
Even that, I wouldn't. I mean, Golden Tate and Jaden Greathouse are diametrically opposed in terms of style and body type. So I don't know if the question is with regard to productivity. Yeah, I think we all expect Jaden Greathouse. Pete, I think it was you that said could have a breakout year. Golden Tate would be one of the last guys that would come to mind for me. Sorry, Steamy.
Yeah, that's Golden Tate is such a unique skill set.
Well, and the speed factor. I mean, he's way faster than Greathouse.
Yeah, I mean, the speed, the shiftiness. I mean,
maybe the leaping hands.
That's a nice slot receiver who can play other positions.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal. I don't see that one. Be great if that happened, but Golden Tate. It was the did he end up winning the Biletnikoff? Is that right?
He did.
He did.
I want to throw a little more on Golden Tate here because I wrote after he finished that he had the best single season for a Notre Dame offensive player ever, because he did. He had that season. Okay.
The yardage is outrageous.
Yeah, and here's the thing about the yardage being outrageous. Yards from scrimmage at 1682, and that doesn't include the one time he decided to go back there and return a punt for a touchdown because he felt like it. Have you guys heard that story from Robbie Toma?
No.
Toma, apparently, he was on someone else's show. I apologize. It's one of our competitors. I really don't remember who it was, but I saw it on Twitter. They said, Toma, I guess, said he'll never forget Golden Tate going to Goodman, was the return man, which always makes Pete smile. He went out to Goodman, pointed to him to get off the field. He goes, I'm taking this blank back to the house. He caught it and went and scored against Pitt. And the place, I guess, at Pitt, remember, they lost the game.
Oh, yeah, they needed it. I guess
the bench lost their mind. He just literally said, get off, I'm going to take this blank back to the house. But I want to go back to the stats. I went through that year, because I'm weird. 1,682 total scrimmage yards. 8 of them were when the game had been decided. Because they had 10 games that came down to the last thing.
Yeah.
He had 0 yards total against Washington State. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 15. And he caught a 15-yard pass against Nevada in the second half. So one play that he made the entire season was not a high-leverage situation for all those yards. He was unreal.
Yeah. I'd just say, if you want to do a sophomore apples to apples, this is Jaden Greathouse is up against Golden Tate's sophomore year, 58 catches for 1,080 yards and 10 touchdowns, which somehow he managed to do without starting 5 of the games of the season. Like, it made no sense. He was phenomenal. I think Jaden Greathouse is a good player.
Yeah, and I think Jaden Greathouse has a chance to be a really good player. But I the catch that Tate made at the end of the half in San Antonio with like yes. four defenders around him, all of them 4 to 6 inches taller than him, was just there's no way in hell he's gonna come down with that, and he came down with it.
Remember the USC catch where he just Taylor Mays tried to level him and he just caught it for a touchdown anyway? The other one, he caught it and he flexed on him in the end zone.
Or when he destroyed Richard Sherman at Stanford.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he destroyed Richard Sherman at Stanford too. It was
he jumped into the Michigan State band. I mean, come on, Golden Tate, the freaking icon at Notre Dame. Show some respect.
Now we have the best story. He removed a punt returner and said, "I'm going to take this blank back," and he did it.
We have a question from David Lopez 5. It seems like I read Sean Sevillano's name and Cole Mullen's name more than I did Brennan Vernon's name during this recent scrimmage. Does Vernon have a ways to go?
I tried to couch this when I said I wrote down 23 guys' names on defense that made a play, because technically I was watching defense that day. I wrote down those other two names and not Vernon. That doesn't mean he didn't make a good play, but that was one scrimmage notes. That's all it was. I'm just surprised Cole Mullins went in there. And remember we said, wow, that's Cole Mullins early, and he made a play immediately.
No, he in previous practices, he's getting opportunities. He's not that big yet.
Because he looks like he's not ready.
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, I think they like him. He shows up. There's no doubt about it. And I don't want to, you know, how I love the future of Brennan Vernon, but he's transitioning to a new position now. They want him to trim down to play DN last year. And now he has to bulk up to be D tackle. So he's kind of in a tough situation, but I really believe there's a good football player there. Sean Sevillano has an opportunity, but he's got to be getting much better shape. Cole Mullins is a player. I think Cole Mullins will eventually emerge. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised he didn't make a play here or there, but I'm not to the point where it, I think, is a concern or a comment on, you know, where his career is turning.
I guess if 23 guys make a play, you'd expect Brennan Vernon would have been one of them, had you said. Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of like, okay, he's like when we were projecting him out of high school, I'm trying to remember exactly where I was on that. Like you're thinking D tackle and then they want him at D end and then the season ends and they want him at D tackle, which is like a 40-50 pound.
I think he had to lose the weight just to be a. Didn't he gain way too much weight after
High school? Yeah, probably. Yeah. I think all those guys have a chance, especially Mullins and Vernon. If Sevillano, I mean, Sevillano is going to have to drop a significant amount of weight before we can really evaluate, because he's really quick off the snap. He showed that throughout high school against on a good team against good competition. But between now and August, he's got to drop a bunch before it can really fully evaluate him.
From Dan Quinlan, with the transfer portal, how much do coaches still care about preserving that fifth year? Who on the 2024 team redshirted that does not include COVID and projects to still be at Notre Dame for his fifth year? I don't exactly know what that means, but is like who are the graduate students or who is a senior that has already redshirted?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's a good question, though, because the game has changed so dramatically. But I still think that most coaches are in the, you know, you can't play that game with everybody like, oh, well, hell, he's going to leave or he's not. If he doesn't, I mean, Brennan Vernon is an example of a guy that would be a, you know, probably by his fifth year is going to be really good. Now, could he leave before then? Of course, but you don't know how to plan. You can't really plan for that. I think there's certain aspects of the job, even though the game has changed so dramatically off the field, which then leads to being, dramatic change on the field. You still have to coach them the way you're going to coach them. I don't know that I've seen a significant change in the way coaches manage their roster in terms of preserving a year of eligibility.
Well, with the 4-game rule, that's not that old. That makes it harder to distinguish who's going to play and who doesn't. I don't think Marcus Freeman is all that different from Brian Kelly. If you can help us win, great. We're going to play you. I think that the outside of offensive linemen and maybe interior defensive linemen, I just don't think the utility of saving the year is as high as maybe or as intentional as maybe what it used to be 10, 15 years ago.
I think you automatically try to redshirt, four game redshirt or two game redshirt your quarterback so you can talk him into staying longer, because you've put separation in between that person's eligibility and the guy that came before him in some cases, especially if that guy plays. Like, I know Angeli and Minchie both redshirted, but let's say Angeli didn't and they redshirt Minchie, you go, all right, you got 2 years. You got a 2 year separation. Can you bear with us and fight for this job? But you have two extra years. Offensive line, of course, they still accept it. The real key for redshirting for me is, if you redshirt a guy, you preserve his, what would be his senior year if he gets hurt in game five or six, because you've lost him. His career's over.
Yeah.
But you have a redshirt from his freshman year. So the four game redshirt makes this easy. I don't know what it would look like nowadays if there was no four game redshirt. I think they would be throwing people out there and just say, I want you to help me. I don't really know if I care you help somebody else in 4 years.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's respectful to the player to not burn the year for six games that's special teams.
Right.
Because like, even if he can't help you down the road, like, give the guy a shot to go help somebody else. And if he does, that's like no skin off your back, because he wasn't going to help you.
Like Kaiser, they thought would play the whole year, and then they decided to pull back and like, oh, okay, hold on. We're going to redshirt you after four games. That was huge. Even if COVID didn't exist, that was huge for him last year. He'd have been a fifth-year senior for Notre Dame.
Jaden Osbury last year.
Yeah.
The Traore was under the four, right?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
He hit the four. Like, that's a different story. He's not going to play a fifth year anywhere. Maybe, hopefully, he has a fourth year.
And Osbury probably doesn't play a fifth year anywhere either.
Yeah.
Unless there's an injury. I think it's an interesting question. I just, you know, a lot of times with offensive and defensive linemen, and I agree with you, Pete, if they're ready to play, they'll, you know, Marcus Freeman will play them. But many times you just don't know during their freshman year, because they're not big enough and they haven't had enough time to develop in positions that, you know, especially offensive line, it takes a while to learn how to be a quality college offensive lineman.
You feel like they accept it still, offensive linemen to redshirt four games, and quarterbacks understand it. Maybe.
Yeah.
Other than that, they all want to be out there.
Yeah. Offensive linemen are wired differently, though, and they probably always will be to some extent. Question from Annie Davis. What has RJ Oben done with his spring to establish himself in the rotation?
Has he done anything?
No, but I think his Duke resume would be help establish.
Yeah, I mean, I don't rotation. Know. Yeah, I think I can explain what I saw of his Duke film, but I don't know that we had a full practice the other day. I don't feel like I came out of that knowing a whole lot about RJ Oben. I know what he looked like, you know, at Duke, and that was a kind of like a Tasmanian devil kind of scrambling things up at the line of scrimmage, which I think is very valuable.
I mean, look, this is probably a good time to look back to last year's spring when we came out of it thinking like Javonte Jean-Baptiste, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess he didn't really do anything. Well, it turns out that he just needed to get healthy and learn the playbook and how Al Washington wanted him coach. And I feel like Al Washington was pretty direct in referencing this when we asked him about RJ Oben earlier in spring practice. It's just they're asking him to do different things with maybe some different techniques. It's a different playbook. You're not going to have it down right away. I don't think that's a reason to be concerned.
Yeah, we got Al Washington and RJ Oben first this spring for interviews, first or second. Had we had them last, we would have more information on RJ Oben for you.
Yeah.
RJ Oben in his five biggest games last year, I think we can agree, Clemson, Northwestern, Notre Dame, NC State, Florida State. Oh, and we'll throw North Carolina in there. So six biggest games, 20 pressures. That's what he did this spring.
Yeah.
Yeah, he that resume that nobody else has on that side.
Right. And we can reference, and we all do reference JJB last spring, but JJB was unproven. RJ Oben's proven. Not as a run defender per se. And that's obviously really, really important. But he's with Burnham and Bryce Young. So if he's not good against the run, they're going to look to Burnham on early downs, I would imagine.
I got an interesting one for you here. So those are 20 in those six games, right? He only had seven in the other six. So if you have a college football fantasy league and Notre Dame is playing Navy, Army, Northern Illinois, and Miami, Ohio, don't play RJ Oben because he does not seem to be totally interested. Zero against Lafayette, one against UConn, one against Wake, one against Virginia. I guess he just gets up for the bigger ones, which is okay with me.
I prefer that to the opposite.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe RJ Oben needs Notre Dame's 2023 schedule to fully excel.
Yes. He's going to stink for three-fourths of this season.
Kind of a killer game on Labor Day weekend, though.
Yes, he's going to have a great day to start. That's good.
Question from Need a Turnover. I know Al Golden likes to blitz his linebackers, and that appears to be one of their strengths, but absent of that, what is your confidence of the front four reliably getting pressure on the quarterback?
I mean, it's not high like it was in 18 and 19.
No.
Trying to think back to previous years here under Freeman and Kelly's last year. They weren't great at front four getting there, but I like Traore and Botello and Oben. So it's pretty, and Mills and Cross. I actually think this is the best front four pass rush since 19. And 19 had Kareem and Aquara, so that's not preseason, it's not close because they were the two best coming back in the country, two of the best tandem of pass rushers coming back. But I like Mills, Cross, Oben, Traore, and Botello, and Burnham. It's a quality. I think it's a better front four pass rush than recent years, but he loves sending those linebackers, and they're good at it too. Snead and KBA are going to be good at it.
I didn't think last year's was going to be as good as it turned out to be. Could they match it? Yeah. I think it could be as good as last year, which was good. So, this isn't like 2018 with that front four getting pressure where you really could do whatever you wanted. I think it should give Al Golden a chance to be incredibly versatile and complex in what he wants to do. But I think a lot of times, like if you can just get pressure with four, if you're so good, you can be basic and just a real pain in the butt. That way, I don't think they're that good. But they're good enough that I think they're going to be able to get pressure when they want it. I mean, I remember it was going into Kareem's last year, like pass rush, which is Brian Kelly told me in the summer, is like my big concern about this team is pass rush. Like, are we going to be able to, or was after Kareem's senior year?
After Kareem. It was the COVID year. Yeah.
Yeah. They won so many games in 19 by getting pressure at the right time. I feel like this group will probably be able to get pressure at the right time, even if it's not an overwhelming pass rush.
I picked this question because this was a question that I would have had in previous years, but I don't now, because especially with Al Golden as a coordinator, because I think that you create, and much of this has to do with Mills and Cross, the commotion that they cause in the middle of the line creates opportunities for the edge. Now you say, okay, edge is they're come out here and these guys are in the interior, but it's still, you know, 4-on-5 or 5-on-5 in a pass rush situation. And the havoc that those guys can create will naturally create opportunities for the defensive ends, the Vipers and the strong side defensive end. So you want pressure from your front four. You'd prefer that all the time. But with Al Golden as your coordinator in his third year and the way that these guys understand this, I'm not concerned about this at all. They will create a pass rush. You know, you can look at guys individually and say, you know, okay, Botello's got to be better. Well, I think Botello's is going to be better in a Viper situation. And
Traore's a big ad. He was a freshman that who's made that? One play last year. Trubakar is a huge ad.
Oh, he, well, I wrote about, that was the one guy I wanted to talk about. In my Thursday thoughts today, that guy, that's the real deal. And then somebody said, well, is he big enough? He can rush the passer. He's part of a team pass rush that will create havoc for opponents. This is the least, I don't know if I should say least of Notre Dame's concerns, but this is, I do not believe this is going to be a concern. They had 31 sacks last year. They will exceed that this year. They've got the personnel to do it, the scheme to do it, and the coordinator to call the scheme.
Maltese Irish, do you see Notre Dame's interest in former Rice cornerback Treshawn Devones as a sign they anticipate someone leaving, insurance in case Benjamin Morrison's recovery suffers a setback, or as a depth piece to replace Clarence Lewis, or a combination of all three? Irish Illustrated Insider's favorite.
Yeah, we always choose all three because it is. I mean, I don't know who else is leaving in at corner, but you lost Clarence Lewis, who's was a combo guy back there for them. But I had a chance to. It's actually Trayshawn Devonis.
No, it's not Devonis. It's Devonis.
Yeah, I mean, that's how he said it. Anyway,
no, he would know more than me. I met him. Yeah,
he would know. So. He would know. Devonis is the way he said it. Had a bunch of dealt with injuries in 21 and 22. Really, barely played until last year. He's a really good football player. He's very, very light on his feet. He can be very physical. Not a lot of press coverage. Will come up and hit you. Great change of direction. Had 11 passes broken up last year. He was the hut for what it's worth. You know, we kind of go back and forth on Pro Football Focus. I mean, it's still a good guide regardless.
Oh, yeah. I just don't like
it. We can disagree with it. But when, you know, we didn't see him play, when Pro Football Focus has him as the highest graded defensive player for Rice last year, I think you have to put a little bit of stock on. He's really light on his feet. They don't have him yet. I'm not pretending like they do, but I think he would be a real help. And frankly, you don't know exactly how Ben Morrison recovers from shoulder surgery. You don't, you know, will he be, you know, cause he's going to miss so much, you know, physical weight, some weight training over the next few months. It's just going to be difficult. So he's all those things. I think he'd be a fine addition to the cornerback room.
I know internally they felt like they were short at corner, you know, during offseason workouts. I mean, before spring practice started and Clarence Lewis left, they felt like, you know, that we could use another guy here. This would be that. I don't think it's a commentary really on Morrison or Mickey or Gray at all. It's more like, maybe we don't want to roll with Chance Tucker quite yet. This guy has played a lot more football, and you know, if you can get him to come in and start as be your fourth corner to start, and then when somebody else gets hurt, because somebody always gets hurt, maybe he's your third corner, you feel better about that than what you have on your roster.
I mean, say what you want about Clarence Lewis, he was way ahead of Chance Tucker coming into the spring.
Yeah.
When he left, it elevated Chance Tucker to number four. Tucker probably work out nicely as a number four if your first three stay healthy, because he's in his fourth year. Yep. He can play some football. But Clarence Lewis played 2,000 snaps of high leverage football for you. He was a perfect number four corner.
Yeah, he led the defense in snaps in 2021.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't, but
I mean, he impressed me as soon as he got to Notre Dame, no doubt. This guy's a better athlete than that.
I'm not comparing him to Lewis.
No, I understand. I understand. And frankly, this guy could probably go someplace where he could get more snaps and he's going to get a Notre Dame. But don't anybody that hears this, don't tell him that. And maybe Notre Dame could get him in here because he's a good football player. He's a special teams kind of guy. I don't really know what his injuries were. I can't really find any specifics as to what they were. Somebody that hears this may be able to share that information. But anyway, he had a good year in 2023.
ND Dan 106. With Micah Shrewsbury picking up one transfer, what areas of need for Notre Dame basketball? What areas does Notre Dame basketball need to be on the bubble of the NCAA tournament next year?
Yeah, I'm not going to project about where they are in landing an NCAA tournament bid, but they want another big. There's no doubt, and Alaco is what they wanted in the backcourt. Now you lost Booth, so that's probably another player that you need. That's killer. So that. You know, that's another player. So it would be definitely a big up front. The idea was to get a big and a backcourt piece. Now you got a Locko. There's your backcourt. You need a big.
You lost a starter. That hurts.
Yeah. You know, it's going to get a lot better.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, it was going to get a lot stronger, which is what Booth's main shortcoming was. Anyway, so you got to get another shooter, you know, maybe a shooting forward, and then a big that can run a little bit and have some athleticism that can play above the rim, which Matt Zona could definitely not do, and Keba Jai occasionally does.
Good on Matt Zona.
You need a more skilled Keba Jai.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're, I don't know where they, when I put out a master list on March 19th, there were a couple guys out there. they never really made much headway with any of those guys that I liked. It's no wonder I liked them, because I'm not even sure where some of them ended up, but they're good players. You know, they're bigs with some athleticism, and that's what they need. I understood why Micah Shrewsbury played Jai as much as he did. A lot of people complained about the minutes that he got, but you've got to have that big man presence. Shrewsbury is very dialed in to have that big man presence. They need one that's a little bit more athletic and can offer more offensively.
Imagine being a graduate transfer 3 years ago, like a reserve, like Matt Zona, and getting nothing, and being Matt Zona's graduate transfer level now and going to the NIL. It's such a weird world that they get to live in. It's amazing, man. I'd be jealous if I was Ben Hansbrough, transfer over to Notre Dame for nothing, just getting his degree and walking on.
Did you hear that? Matt Zona and his $100,000 from Fordham.
What?
Insane. But then somebody goes, well, Tyler Buchner made $1 million. It's like, all right, well, there you go.
That's it. That's what JB's a numbers guy, man. I literally thought about, I wonder how much he would get.
I didn't think that.
Probably 50. I thought,
congratulations.
Probably 50. I mean, I thought that would, God.
Wow. That's, this is like Tate's favorite players.
I know. I was going to say Tate Sampson is something to,
that's
big Matt Zona fan.
That's unbelievable. I'm going to try out for third base at Notre Dame again.
Well, they had the punter. They like older punters, so you're fine there. There's
Can you be yelled at?
Yeah. Can you be yelled at? You can be yelled at.
I'll yell back, but yes, I can be yelled at. Yep. Question from the Irish Rover. Who gets drafted higher, Joe Alt in this year's draft or Benjamin Morrison in next year's draft? Let's say we don't know anything about Ben Morrison's recent shoulder surgery.
Still Joe Alt. Still Joe Alt. Yeah.
I agree. Joe Alt.
Yeah, it makes it easier because he's had an injured shoulder.
Joe Alt's a really, really special football player. Not that Ben Morrison isn't, but offensive tackles like that that play with that kind of balance and never lunge and stay in position and have a father that's taught him how to play the game extremely well. Joe Alt would always go ahead of Ben Morrison in this situation.
Yeah. Final question is from Tom Bullock 3, who I believe went to South Bend St. Joe. What exactly can be learned by watching the Blue Gold game, and what should fans pay attention to, or should we not worry about it and just enjoy the show?
Tom Bullock, the basketball player?
No, I was thinking Tom Bullock, the student that went there. Oh, okay. Yeah. It could be. Maybe you're right. You never know.
I don't even know if that's not the right name. Okay, we were talking about this before we aired, so I'm gonna shoot my shot right here and say that here's the way I would look at it. If it's somebody like Boubacar Traore, who we in the media and the coaching staff has talked about as really excelling this spring, and you see him make a play on Saturday, you say, okay, man, this guy is on the rise, and this is somebody that I can have expectations to be an impactful player in the spring. If it's a third string, whatever, that the coaches haven't talked to, I'm not going to say the person I was talking about because it would sound demeaning, but if it's a third string whatever position,
and he makes CJ Carr,
and no, that's a little different. He's fourth team. No, that's a little bit different. You know what I'm talking about. And he makes a play, and you haven't heard a peep about him since he got here at Notre Dame. Then you can think, maybe that's kind of a one-off kind of situation with him, but. As a rule, do not put too much stock in something that happens in a Blue Gold game. Can't we learn from last year and the year before and the year before and the year before and every year before that in Blue Gold games that many times what we see in these glorified, they're not even glorified scrimmages, they're less than that to a large extent because the team split up. It's just, just enjoy the moment. If it's somebody that you know that the coaches and the media have been talking about, then there's a pattern there.
That's about it. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Also, anything that happens in the fourth quarter, out. Like, it doesn't matter how spectacular it is, does not count.
That's the LSR dropping of the pen.
Yeah.
From the South End Tribune writer.
Pretty much. It's almost a first half only game. But I mean, look, there were some things that mattered last year. Sam Hartman versus Tyler Buchner. That mattered. We knew it mattered when it was happening, even if no one wanted to admit it immediately after. I don't think there's a competition like that out there on this roster. And it's like offensive linemen, defensive lines are so mixed up. It's kind of hard to tell like what the issues are, if they have them, good or bad. So I like, you know, individual matchups. If a wide receiver makes a competitive catch over a DB, okay. Or a DB makes a competitive breakup against a wide receiver. Yeah, I'll take that into summer. But the team stuff where like you got jumbled pieces fitting together, that's just not something that I think really carries the day going into the summer.
Thomas Bullock, the basketball player, played for the Northern New Mexico Eagles last in 2015. I don't think that was Priester's guy.
Oh, no,
Priester,
that's my guy.
Were you thinking Lewis Bullock? Lewis Bullock, maybe, from Michigan?
I have no idea. I could have sworn there was a Bullock that I don't think I played against. Maybe I coached against, but that would have been basketball, so I wouldn't have coached against him. I don't know. To further my point, Bryce Young. If Bryce Young makes a play on Saturday, okay. If Cole Mullins, who we were just talking about, makes a play, a good physical play on the interior line, okay. Osbury, Jordan Clark, Chris Mitchell comes into Notre Dame with 100 career catches. If he makes a great catch, okay, he's continuing to do what he's been doing since he got into college. KVA, any of those linebackers, we've spoken very positively about those linebackers. And I'm at least one guy that's on the Preston Zinner bandwagon. And so if he makes a play, say, hey, at least there's one guy out there that was expecting that to happen. Cooper Flanagan, another guy that we, you know, right?
Pete's guy. Pete's on my bandwagon.
I'm with you on that, Pete. I think Cooper Flanagan, he made a grab. You know, when you watch those kind of scrimmages, it's just kind of like images that stick in your head. He made a catch Saturday. It's like, I can envision it. He's long. He spreads out and makes not a diving catch, but a stretching catch. Okay. That's a guy that can play.
I have a great one for you. Go back to all you film people, go to your Peacock and pull up the 2021 Blue Bowl game. And a young tight end running super fast down the seam, making a lunging catch and staying up named Mitchell Evans. Turns out that type of thing mattered a little bit too.
Yeah.
More than we realized.
Yeah. And I'm sure like, it wasn't in the fourth quarter though, right?
No, it probably wasn't. Great. You know, great. Micah Gilbert. If Micah Gilbert makes a great play, it's like, okay, this guy's really flashing the spring.
And if Andrew Yanishek scores for the second time in his third Blue Goal game, then we know who to bet on next year.
Then we're happy for the Yanishek family, right? Who's going crazy. Like, who was cheering? What was that preseason practice last year? Yoakum?
No, it was Skip. Was it Ace?
Velada. Skip Velada. Skip
Velada, because he scored. This is an amazing story. We are all inside, and it's the one practice where like all the parents are there and the faculty's there. It's always an August practice, right? And he scored on a wheel route, and you could hear his mom behind us yell, "Go, Skippy!" It was one of the greatest things to hear at a college practice. And I bet he wishes. He probably like to do it again. It was
okay. Here's a prediction. This is second half. This is fourth quarter. Justin Fisher, who's a local kid who played quarterback, I believe, at Mishawaka, right?
Yeah.
And then came in as a running back and then has since moved to tight end, but that he's playing running back. I know he was drafted as a running back for the Blue Gold game. He's like Velada. He's a thick physical. He's a kid that's really built himself up. Justin Fisher will score a touchdown in the fourth quarter of the Blue Gold game.
And Marcus Freeman will be asked about it afterwards.
Yeah, local news will ask about it.
Oh, there's yeah.
It might be a limited number of members of the media that might ask about it, but it will be asked. All right, we're going to wrap up. We're going to wrap things up here today. I want to say something here, and it's. I want to talk about Irish Illustrated here a little bit and our workforce, because I am so thrilled with the roll call that we have now that's reporting for Irish Illustrated, in addition to Jack Freeman still producing our podcast with Tim O'Malley and John Bryce, and our recent additions, Drew Mentock and Eric Thomas. Eric Thomas started this weekend. He's going to be a sensational recruiting reporter for us. Of course, our interns, I think our subscribers or our listeners on the podcast know more about Tom and Noah, our interns, than just about anybody on our staff. And then Tom Loy is continuing to be a key member of the 24/7 national workforce and still contributing to us. And we are fortunate enough to have Pete Sampson of The Athletic join us for most of our podcasts. So I am thrilled about the direction of Irish Illustrated. For those who just listened to our podcast, I'm telling you, you are missing a ton with our website, and we strongly encourage you to give us a look and subscribe to Irish Illustrated.
2 o'clock next week.
2 o'clock next week. Thank you. Yes, we will have a podcast on Monday, a couple days after the Blue Gold game, but we are not recording until 2. So Jack won't have that produced until we get a little bit later in the afternoon. But anyway, I wanted to say that because I'm extremely, extremely proud of the group that we have assembled at Irish Illustrated. So until next time, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.